Moncrief on News Talk
with Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.
TV.
On the radio.
Roll it there, Colette.
Hey, how you doing?
Bazinga.
Well, I didn't expect the kind of Spanish Inquisition.
One for everybody in the audience.
It's going to be legendary.
You just crossed over into the Twilight Zone.
Be announced. Oh my God. Shall we say it together, Danny?
We should say it together.
We should say it together.
Let's create a little suspense first. Ireland!
There you go. That's the Eurovision Song Contest. Though what you heard there obviously was the semi-final. Where Ireland got through the last slot. Ireland got. James joins us once again. I thought that show was presented by two trans men. Turns out it wasn't.
Would have been on brand, I think, yeah. In some ways. It was four different women who all were dressed in different inappropriate ways, in the sense of way too formal for the occasion. It's always surprisingly formal in a funny way. I mean, you know, if it's a man, he's always in black tie. But it's so strange, the Eurovision. I never really stopped to think about the fashion, which is sort of at the end of the list of odd things about the Eurovision.
Yeah.
But like, I won't deny, I'm a big Eurovision fan. I have watched it always, as far back as I can remember. Even last year, I missed it because two friends of mine got married really selfishly.
on the same date?
On the same date. Oh, and But every year my friends and I would have a Eurovision party, and the following week we met up and watched on YouTube 1994 when Ireland won and Riverdance was on. And it was really fun. If anyone is, you know, if you're looking for a makeup way to do it, it's very good. So I was delighted for Ireland to qualify because it adds an actual sense of excitement to Saturday. And even though we were called out 10th, that was not representative of the vote. I don't know if they released that voting data or not, really. I like it, but no anorak. But it does add a bit of excitement now on Saturday night when this thing comes along. And I think why I like the Eurovision is twofold. And I've said this, I even remember saying this last year, is that I'm not into sport, right? So I don't have that kind of sense of live TV. You know, the only live TV events for me that sort of take over are things of cultural note, we'll say, like the toy show or something, a political debate or something like that, right? If you are into sport, you get to have this, you know, shared viewing experience with other people. And that's what you get if you like the Eurovision. If, you know, and even you can generally bully people who don't like it into it as well. But the other thing that I think is kind of fascinating about it, and maybe fascinating is pushing it, but at least interesting, is kind of the remit of the Eurovision is all of these disparate countries around Europe and then some and Australia come together and are given, you know, a 3-minute slot, and they have to package pop in 3 minutes. And I think it's quite interesting to observe how, like, the different cultures of the world approach that as a task. And, you know, we have become very, we no longer have like a national selection process. We're just told, this is your song. You better like it or lump it. And it doesn't always work. As you can see, we haven't qualified it since 2015. This year, I mean, our song is, I think it's a very pleasant, nice, you know, ballad. I don't think it's remarkable, but I think it's very cleverly packaged. I mean, it is the most pandering thing to the audience.
Well, was it? I mean, is it kind of pushing the LGBT buttons and...
I mean, like pushing, it's sort of gently, very gently pushing, because I don't think there's like a kiss or anything. It's two guys dancing in a sort of...
What, is that it?
Like, implicit way that they are sort of flirting and maybe not even flirting, that they are like falling in love in the snow and some bizarre street lamp that I can't quite
explain. Doesn't that actually tell us about the competition, though? Because it's not the Eurovision, it's the LGBT Eurovision.
In
really,
a lot of ways.
Because it's been, you know, because it's mostly
look
the gay
at the
community
audience, right?
Who love
it. Look at the audience, right? It is a... It, I mean, they joke about it on the show. Mm. Marty Whelan jokes about it in the commentary. It is not, it's not a secret,
yeah.
Right? It is like, it's now a punchline.
Yeah.
That it's so clear and overt that it is a punchline. And our song, I mean, maybe pandering is the wrong word, right? But like,
it does no harm.
It does no harm.
Yeah.
And certainly it got a massive reaction from the crowd. And I'm not saying that carried us over the line. I don't know where we were in the voting, right? I don't know. We're not going to win. I'm going to put my hand on my heart and say I don't think we're going to win. But I think Cyprus is going to win, which is the one that followed us. And it is like a mix between Beyonce and J-Lo and everyone else. And it's like, it's just like, it's that kind of silly over the top Eurovision wham bam excitement.
Yeah. But even I was just thinking that even if you didn't, if they blanked out, you know, if you blanked out on your telly the country, you could probably guess what part of Europe it came from. The Southern Europeans tend still to do the, you know, the kind of things,
yeah.
You know, and it's more kind of, maybe more, slightly more androgynous the more Northern European
maybe.
You get.
Yeah, but and I think that's interesting. I think it is sort of like we share, I mean, obviously we have a shared culture in Europe. We are the most EU-loving country or whatever. You know, we are big into
we
Europe.
We are at the moment,
right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think that Ireland is quite outward-looking. But again, I just think it's really, like from a sociological perspective, it's quite interesting to see how they approach it, this 180 seconds of pop. I just think it's really kind of interesting to see how each country has done its homework.
Mm.
And the other thing that's strange about it is, you know, like it is a show at the end of the day. The word vision is in there. So it is about the packaging and it's about the pomp and ceremony and all that silliness. But that is across the board. I mean, you're only allowed 6 people on the stage. They're not allowed to play any live instruments. It all has to be pre-recorded. So anytime you see anybody strumming a guitar or banging on a drum, I mean, it's all codswallop. Like it's all completely made up. Then I believe, I'm led to believe that they have some computer algorithm that determines the most exciting way to read out the votes. You know, I think they don't even necessarily have them sort of, you know, lined up. We'll go to Dublin, then we'll go to Lisbon, we'll go to Berlin, wherever.
Yeah.
They seemingly get all the votes in, they then run the numbers, press enter, and it goes, okay, go to London, go to Paris, go to Azerbaijan, I don't know, Baku, I think is the capital.
Oh, so because they know the result
yes,
then already.
They already know the result. But they want to create the tension, add the ceremony.
Oh, that's
to
fair
it.
Enough. Yeah, that's
because it goes on. Don't get me wrong.
No, you see, but that's the thing when you're saying it's interesting the way they like, but make it stop. It goes on, and I've never watched a full one. I've watched the voting.
Yeah, I kind of think, you know, the one brutal change that I would make would be if you get to the final, you can vote in the final. Do we need to go to every single, like all 40, 50 countries, you know, to get 12? Douze pois. It's not even good anymore because, you know, I used to say as a French teacher, watch the Eurovision. It's a good way to learn the names of the countries. But now they only call out the top three. So you're not learning anything.
It's a good way to learn accented English.
True.
Really. Plus, the voting is still completely predictable.
In yes and no. I mean, right, people like to say that, okay? Mm. And yeah, certainly I would say, look, Cyprus, Greece, they're going to give each other 12 points or whichever, Turkey, I never, you know, it's disputed still, right?
Yeah.
But the thing is, like last year, Portugal won, right? For the first time ever, they've been entering for 50 years. They won with this very beautiful, sweet ballad that sounds like it belongs in a Pixar movie, right? But it won. It came, you know, this song, this ballad came out of nowhere, very simply staged. We can't keep complaining about block voting because other small countries have won. Austria has won. All the Nordic nations have won. You know, we just need to send a good song that matters.
Okay. The comedy sketches?
Yeah, only the Swedes can do that. Like, I mean, I don't even think we'd be able to do it.
No, I don't think anybody should do it because comedy certainly, like pop music, you know, transfers to a certain degree.
A melody is catchy, but
but not a joke.
Yeah, it's, and it really didn't work last night. And I feel, I mean, there was, like, I feel for the presenters because it's just so wooden. You know, it's just like it's impossible. And they're obviously they're not comedians. I mean, they're usually like news readers and other people, someone who can speak French because they need someone to speak. They need a francophone in there. But I don't know. I mean, and the other thing is, I don't know where we would even put it if we won, because I don't know if the three arena. I mean, I don't want them texting and giving out to you, but I don't know if it's big enough, because if you look at these arenas where they have it, it's like the whole floor. I mean, the green room isn't you know, isn't secluded anymore. The green room is on display at all
times. Yeah, that was an interesting production touch.
But that's about five years old. That's not a new thing.
Okay, that was my first time seeing it in many years, to be honest with you. And I only saw.
Did you enjoy it?
No, I saw the last 5 minutes of it.
Okay.
I literally saw
that. Just the tension.
Yeah, I saw them call out the last three. Thing. I earlier on, I'd seen some sort of sketch they were doing, and I thought, well, okay, that hasn't changed. But then I just saw the bit at the end.
Yeah.
And I just heard Marty Whelan sound like he was having a stroke.
I was pleased to hear that he wasn't. I was delighted for him because, I mean, he is so... Don't get me wrong. At the end of the day, I'll probably watch it with Graham rather than Marty. But I do think Marty is really earnest in his love of it. And I think he has to toe the party line of saying the song is amazing and being really well received every year, even when it clearly isn't.
Yeah.
And it sort of feels like a win for Marty, you know?
Yes. Good on, Marty. Now, two last questions on this. Number one, like if our entry and pretty much all of them are gaying it up, then why is Russia broadcasting this?
So it's obviously well documented, this Russian law about gay propaganda in the loosest terms of what propaganda is. As far as I'm aware, in fairness to the journal, yesterday they did a fact check on this because it had come out, to use, you know, for want of a better term, in March that the Russian TV might, you know, suppress and censor the Irish song with its dad sing, which is by no means the gayest thing in the show anyway, right? But it didn't happen. The journal went, they spoke to an Irish journalist based in Moscow. They asked him to ask his followers, had it happened? And no, it hadn't been censored. So that's not going to happen. In order to be in the competition, you have to agree to broadcast all entries,
yes,
no matter what.
Okay, no matter what. So is there anything in it for middle-aged heterosexuals anymore?
Well, I guess there's the four women presenting. And there's plenty of, like, lithe, buxom and so on, gyrating women on display as well.
Right, a couple of bits of TV news. Lethal Weapon. It seems as if the guy playing Riggs is actually channeling Riggs.
Yes, yeah.
This is the TV series we're talking about.
So this is a Fox TV show. I think it just ended its second season. I haven't never seen an episode of it. I've never seen a Lethal Weapon movie. But I do know it is extremely popular in the US on Fox and was almost certainly guaranteed a third season renewal until news about this Clayne Crawford, who was playing Riggs, and his very difficult on-set antics were kind of surfaced. Now, nobody knows exactly what he did, but it was, you know, the usual kind of veiled kind of implications of no good. I don't know. All the usual.
Being drunk and being anti-Semitic.
Exactly. And his co-star, one of the Wayan brothers, is not even talking to him. Anyway, when that news broke about a month ago, there was all this talk that he was likely going to get fired. But the show was still in its second season and it was unclear as to what was going to happen. And it came to an end. And if you don't want to know, if you're a big fan, just block your ears for 10 seconds. Basically, in it, he was all set to move off to Texas, but then they shot him.
Yes.
So he's not coming back.
Okay. Or is he?
Or is he?
How are they going to do that? And Owen McDermott is going to be the voice of Love Island, or Australian Love Island.
Yeah, so this I found quite strange because I have to admit, I just didn't get the alchemy of Love Island. I definitely reviewed it in the slot last year, right at the beginning of it, and I was just sort of, I didn't get it. I didn't really understand why people would want to spend their summer watching it. But boy, did they, and it became this, like, 2017 cultural phenomenon, pop culture phenomenon anyway. And it has now been broadcast, or the format has been sold around the world, including to Australia. And this, their wintertime, our summertime, they'll be sending off a few bogans and, you know, muscle people to Mallorca. But Irishman Owen McDermott, radio DJ, TV personality, is going to be the narrator of it, which is quite strange because the selling point of the UK one is the very acerbic narration by this Scottish comedian named, I think, Ian Stirling is his name. He's kind of a bit like, you know, the Come Dine With Me narrator in the sense that he elevates it to beyond just...
Lamb.
Yeah,
yes,
exactly,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, like, he is a stand-up comedian is my understanding. I don't really think of Owen McDermott as a stand-up comedian because he's not a stand-up comedian. He is a presenter.
Right.
So I don't know if they'll, you know, he's going to narrate it with his Irishness. Obviously, it must be in the package that you have to have a regional accent.
I don't know.
In there
somewhere. I suppose good for him.
Yeah, good for him.
Do it.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
broaden his star appeal down under.
I can be sarcastic. Right, we're here to take a break. Two more shows to talk about.
Hello?
Gordon?
This is Gordon.
Good. It's Jeremy Clarkson here. Weirdly, from Who Wants to Be a Millionaire? Now, wonderful. We've got David here, who's doing, yes. He's doing all right, but he needs your help, if you don't mind. Your time starts now.
Hi, Gordon.
Hi, David.
How many sides does a stop sign have? 5, 6, 7, or 8? So a stop sign
know.
In the road. You don't know?
Simple answer, I don't know.
Oh, okay. Are you having a nice evening, then?
More than 5, personally.
More than 5, all right.
I would have thought 5, personally, but that's only 5, a guess.
I don't think it is. I think it's an even number.
Okay.
Okay. No problem, thanks for being honest.
Sorry.
Bye.
Yeah, I don't know if it happened before or after that, but we did play a clip during the week where he then went to ask the presenter, he asked Clarkson how many sides is a stop sign, and Clarkson didn't know either. Well, you'd think, given his
that
he wouldn't
job.
Know that.
Yeah.
But Clarkson kind of dragged it out and was kind of doing that. Are you sure you're going to ask me? You know, oh, I'd be hurt if you didn't ask me. And then said, actually, I haven't a clue. which was kind of a bit mean.
I don't really think that as a lifeline adds anything to the show at all.
No, it's not legitimate as well.
It's sort of nadir this week has been when he sort of gave the wrong answer and somebody lost £7,000. And yeah, that was probably the reaction. I mean, the question was about Son of Adam, the René Magritte painting. What hat is the person with the apple in front of his head wearing?
Right.
And he pushed her to beret because Magritte, that sounds foreign. But yeah, look, so they brought back for a week long Who Wants to Be a Millionaire.
Mm.
And I think there's kind of there is a fascination and a bit of nostalgia to it. What I find really sort of intriguing about this rerun, we'll say, or reboot, whichever we're going to go with, is how much the sort of details of the show have stuck with me. Like the music there in the Phone a Friend, the tick-tock, like that is just, I mean, I can hear it now in my head. I can draw it to my mind immediately because it was such a cultural phenomenon when it came out 20 years ago. And I think why it was so popular, this is conjecture, but is that the answers are right there in front of you.
Yeah.
And you get to see the person struggle or fail.
Yeah.
And also show off. And you get to show off. I mean, you get to work it out for yourself. And it was sort of the clarity of the show that was kind of so intriguing or just appealing to the audience. I think my understanding of it is the reason why it all worked was the Labour Party deregulated some TV law that said you were allowed to suddenly increase the amount of prize
money. Yeah.
And £1 million, even still today, is like a monumental sum of money. Even though I think someone I was reading in the Irish Times that, you know, it's the £1 million of 1998 is £1.73 million sterling today, which is, that's all the way away. But I don't know if I don't know if this is sit down must see television anymore. I mean, when it originally ran, it was like every night of the week, right? It would run for however 2-3 weeks at a time and come back regularly. I don't remember exactly, but I do remember this compulsion to sit down and watch it, even as a family, like this, you know, poring over the questions and talking about it. That kind of, it was very interactive before we even sort of thought of TV being interactive.
But I suppose the key question is Clarkson, who seems to have a thinly veiled air of contempt towards most people. Did he have that towards the contestants?
So I'm not a Clarkson fan. I kind of think of it like I was never a massive Top Gear fan. I sort of abided it really more so being on in the house when I was growing up. And I kind of cannot take him seriously after that thing with the Irish producer. I just feel like he came off so well out of it.
Yes.
He beat up this guy, went drunk, and then made millions of pounds. It just it seems morally bankrupt to me. So I can't rub that stain off him in my mind. I can't warm to him anymore. And I was surprised by how little he annoyed me. And I only watched two of the episodes. It started on Sunday. It's been on every night. And will be on, I guess, till Friday, tomorrow. Mm. But I only watched two. Which was more than enough for me to tap into the nostalgia. I think, like, if you really, really love Who Wants to Be a Millionaire, I don't know what TV you're watching in 2018 because we've moved beyond the compulsion of game shows.
Yeah.
There's better things to watch now. But if you really love it, you're probably better off going on YouTube and watching, like, you know, highlights, if that's what you're looking for.
Yeah, there aren't any great game shows really, are there?
There
people will text in and out.
There aren't any great evening game shows. But
yeah.
I have fondness.
During the day there are.
Yeah,
ones.
During the day there are good. Like, I love Pointless. I could watch Pointless every day. Mm. That is really sort of peak, you know, nerdy. Find the answer no one else did. It's like deliciously challenging. You know, I hate the word one, so. But anyway. There's no more like kind of. I don't think there's any peak TV game show. We just are over that wave. Maybe it will return. Yeah. We're now in peak scripted TV. Maybe it'll be back.
Yeah. Right, our third show is The Great House Revival. This runs on Sundays at 9:30 on RT1. Catch up on the RT player. Here's the clip.
We have lumps of ceilings missing, bits of ivy growing in the house.
Yes.
So did you have to fight your way into this building originally?
I had to climb through a broken window on the first day, yeah. And you know, full of wildlife, full of birds, you know, nature trying to take the house back almost.
And do you sometimes wake up at night and go, oh gosh, what have I done?
I tend to just get too engrossed in the work.
Such an extraordinary project. What's motivating you? Do you know what I mean? It's not money.
If you buy a building like this thinking you're going to make money, you're probably mad. But yeah.
So you're not mad?
No.
Thank God.
So I guess the motivation is just to work on something of consequence and just to save the building. That's sort of the passion at the moment. And it is a bit of a passion project for me.
There you go. The Great House Revival is kind of room to improve on old houses.
Yeah. So it's kind of like a bit like Grand Designs for derelict houses, right?
Mm.
So this one is Ballinafad House, at least in the first episode, which is in Mayo, which is this huge, huge derelict house that was this grand, opulent, you know, I don't know, landed gentry house that was then gifted by the no longer landed gentry to priests and turned into a school for priests who were going off on African missions. And
then
has basically just been left derelict for, I think, maybe 40 years. Falling, you know, ceiling falling in, all the windows broken, moss on the walls, etc. And this Australian man from Perth, Bede, what I would love to have known is how on earth did this man from Perth happen upon this £80,000 wreck? Because they never explained that. And I really wish I'd known how he had come across this, you know, house. But he and his partner, Sandra, I can't remember if she was his wife or not, but anyway, his partner, wanted to revamp it. They were going to sink $500,000 into it to turn it into a wedding venue. And I guess the premise of the show is this going to be a money pit or can it actually be done?
Mm.
Now, it is, right, RT1 loves property. They are like, let me show you around this house. I'm happy to do it as many ways as I can. And this definitely falls very neatly into that. What is kind of, or what I found sort of unusual about the show was how inscrutable Bede was, in the sense that, right, you've got this house doing a lot of the heavy lifting at the beginning of the show because you get to see what was once this grand Georgian manor or whatever in absolute dereliction.
Mm.
You know, like moss, dead birds, all like as terrible, you know, as run down as a building you could imagine. And the whole premise, and that's very dramatic because this is the huge before the inevitable after. But Bede himself was just so inscrutable. He was just, I mean, it was like, it was so emotionless. Like Hugh Wallace, who's the presenter, would come and say, wow, you've done such an amazing job. And he'd be like, yeah. And the problem with that is, the house can only do so much of the drama, right?
Yeah.
This is TV at the end of the day.
Mm.
So you need personality on screen to kind of also get you over the line.
Bit of a row.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or yeah, that's why Dermot has a row,
yeah,
right? That's like, I'm sure, well, I don't know if it's scripted or not, but like, I'm sure it's provoked, right?
Mm.
So in this, you did get characters throughout, particularly a wedding organizer. That's not the right term, but anyway, this woman from AO who was helping them organize the very first wedding. And she had great kind of, she was funny and interesting and all that. Bede, this is not a criticism of him. He did amazing work, right? The house, the parts of the house that they, you know, repaired look fantastic. You'd be very happy to get married there. But he was just so inscrutable that I was almost fascinated by how inscrutable he was. It was just really... We never got to know the real Bede.
But do we care?
I guess we do because, you know, this is an hour-long TV show of turning, you know, turning a house, turning dereliction into beauty, right?
Mm.
And there's only so many times you can hear about water coming through the ceiling or that window needing repair. This stucco has come unstuck and we need to stick it back up. And like, there's only so many times you can hear that before you can just roll on and get to the, get to the big reveal. And then, I mean, if the producers of the show are listening, right, this is a perfectly good premise, very good, easy watching Sunday night. However, when they get to the big reveal, please remind us again, actually, of how, I mean, I know I'm contradicting myself by saying there's only so many times they can show us the dereliction, but show us the, this is what it looked like before and now this is what it looks like. I would have liked a better kind of reminder of this is what this room looked like rather than Hugh Wallace going around, oh, wasn't this the one where that thing was down and so on?
Oh, you know,
just show me.
Not tell.
Yes,
it's,
show
it's
me.
It's room one of television,
so,
really.
I think as a premise, it is very, you know, as I said, perfect Sunday night viewing of watching people living in nicer houses than you, right? That is, that's lovely. And it's not going to be just country piles that have, you know, come undone, I think.
Right, okay, because I was wondering about the kind of political, slight political tone to that.
Next week, yeah, I understand it's somewhere in Dublin. So that'll be interesting as well to see, as a bitter reminder of where I could be. But just what was particularly interesting about this episode was just how difficult he was to read as a participant.
Okay. Yeah. Well, maybe next week we'll have somebody more giving. James, thanks a million for coming into us. James Dempsey there. We'll take a break. Back in a minute. After this.
Moncrief on News Talk.
With Gas Networks Ireland. Natural gas is compatible with a wide range of modern appliances. Gasnetworks.ie/movetogas.